This is CIUT 89.5 FM. My name is Valentino Asenza. Happy August the 20th to you all. And tonight we are interviewing two authors with two very different types of books, but still two really cool books. So our next guest is Linda Kenyon. Linda Kenyon is a Canadian writer who lives year-round with her husband Chris Hatton on one boat or another, either their 43-foot steel sailboat currently in the Bahamas or the boat they built in a meadow on their farm south of Owen Sound, Ontario. Stories about their sailing adventures appear regularly in magazines, and Linda has had many short stories published in Canadian literary journals. She has written two books of flash fiction, You Are Here, published by Trout Lily Press, and This is a Love Song, published by Stone Garden Studios, as well as a book of nonfiction, Rainforest Bird Rescue, Changing the Future for Endangered Wildlife, published by Firefly Books, which won a Science and Society Journalism Award from the Canadian Science Writers Association. Visit her at lindakenyon.ca. She is in studio with me, and her C is called Sea Over Bow, published by Signature Editions. And hello, Linda.
Hello.
Welcome to Hal. Thank you for coming out, and congratulations on your book.
Thank you.
So what gave you the idea? Okay, number one is, what gave you the idea to write a memoir about your sailing adventure? And two, how did you also get the idea to flash back to what led you out to sea in the first place?
Okay, that's really an interesting question. After we'd sailed across the ocean, I wanted to write about what it was like out there. Like, so the middle of the ocean is such a truly wild place, and so few people get to really experience it. Lots of people fly over in an airplane or perhaps cross in a cruise ship where you're at a great remove from what's actually happening at sea level. So people don't know what it's like out there. And my original intention was just to try to share what that was like, the beauty of it, and also how fearsome it can get. So I wrote this fantastic 80,000-word book about our journey, going step by step along our journey to take people along with me out there and then across to the other side. And so it wasn't a memoir at all, really. It was just a straight adventure or an accounting of what happened. There wasn't very much of me as a person in the book at all. And then I began working with an editor who said, okay, so have you ever even heard of a narrative arc? And I had to admit that I had, but I'd sort of forgotten that maybe that would be a good thing to have in a book-length project. I'd only ever written shorter fiction before, so I failed to do that. So he said, first of all, you need to shorten this down and focus on the time that you cross the ocean. That's really the interesting part of the story. You set out, you get to the other side, lots of stuff happens in between. That's your arc. But she said the other thing, and this is what turned it from an adventure story into a memoir, the other thing she said is, if people don't have any sense of who you are, of who you were before you set out on this journey, of how this journey changed you, it's just another, you know, it's just not interesting. It's not interesting. They need to know about you for this story to really come to life, to understand how big a step it was for you to go out into the ocean in the first place and how it changed you, the reaching the other side.
The one thing, I mean, for me, I always say that water grounds me. I live in the beaches here in Toronto, and one of the things I love to do is I just love just to go out and look. The one lucky thing that Torontonians have is that if you look at the end of Lake Ontario, on the other end is the Niagara Escarpment. So it looks like it's you can't see the other side. It looks like it keeps on going, whereas from the other side you can see all the different cities from there. So I always say that the expanse of the water grounds me. But there's a friend of mine that said, would you feel the same way if you were out on a boat? And I say, well, why wouldn't I? And they say, well, because you're on land and you're looking out at the expanse. But once you're out to sea, anywhere you're looking in any direction is expanse. Would you be able to handle that? And I think about that, and I just the magnitude of it. For you, did it first scare the hell out of you, or was it just something that was it adrenaline? Was it something that you couldn't get enough of?
Well, it's probably something that's actually wrong with me. I probably should have been frightened being out there, or should have been stimulated, scared. I have just never felt as at home anywhere as I did out there when there was just nothing on the horizon and there was just the water and the sky, and I felt really tiny and insignificant, and I felt really free. It's so hard. I have trouble explaining this. I felt like there was enough room for me out there.
If there was enough room for you out there, that's an interesting thing. The form that your memoir takes between the flashing back and the present day is very much like a tidal effect. Because you don't, it's not in such a form that you're like, okay, well, here's where she's going to flash back. Right. You sometimes go very briefly to present day, and then all of a sudden you're flashing back. How did you pick what would stimulate a flashback?
Oh, it's that that part of it was really instinctive. Mm. It sounds strange to say that, but it really was. I thought I knew what backstory I needed to put in to give a fuller picture of me and sort of how I came to be doing this journey. And as I went back through doing the second draft and thinking about where to put those things, or what I needed to put in and where to put it, it just sort of came together. It was probably the easiest writing I've ever done, because I'd get to a point and I'd think, I'd stop and think about it, and then I'd think, there's something about that and something about my grandmother crossing this same ocean in the hold of a boat, or my great-grandmother, I guess it would have been. So that it sounds sort of mystical to say that, but it really just came to me. I didn't map it out. I didn't get a big chart and write where all the flashbacks would be and where it would all go. Just in the second draft, I just let them come forward.
Now, the title, Sea Over Bow, I wanted to ask, is that a type of knot?
No, that the title of the book comes from a song. I don't think Great Big Sea wrote it, but it was one of the songs that I listened to when we were on the crossing. I had a collection I called my Night Watch music, and I would listen to this on the long night watches, and Sea Over Bow was one of the songs. It says, wave over wave, sea over bow, I'm as happy a man as the sea will allow. Obviously, I'm not a man, but when it's things are right out there, you can be just so incredibly happy. So, and there were two meanings to that. So I liked that. I liked that it was my night watch song, and there was a kind of real happiness to being out there. I also liked that it worked in terms of the background that I was giving, in terms of what my past was, that there were many times in the flashbacks that I describe, and even in the present, where I was swamped. I was swamped, so it was taking the seas over the bow. So it worked at both those levels, I thought.
We also are treated to some interesting education about sailing as well. Some interesting terminology. Okay, so for instance, what is a Genoa?
Oh, boy. I had to learn this stuff quickly, because when I first started sailing, or when I had not sailed before I met Chris. Mm-hmm. So just before this book starts, I'm 45, I think, or so. Never been in a sailboat, never been in a boat on the water, and meet a man who all he wants to do is sail across the ocean. And I'm at a point in my life where I'm ready for something like this. So I say, sure, why not? You know, quit my job, sell everything I own. But I had to learn to sail first. So I had this really steep learning curve when I first got on the boat and realized that every single thing, it doesn't matter what it is, on a boat it's called something else. Mm-hmm. So the thing that you sit on in the sitting room, which you might want to call a couch, no, that's a settee. And everything has a name. So the Genoa, a Genoa is a kind of foresail that is very long. So there's the mainsail, the mm-hmm. big stick that goes up, the mainsail's on that, and then there's a shroud, a wire line that comes down to the bow of the boat, and there's a sail that gets run up that. That's a foresail. Sometimes there's an inner foresail, and the Genoa is just a long, long foresail, one that comes around, or I think is, what does Chris say, the clue extends abaft the beam. What's the beam? What's the clue? Yeah, I had to get all that too.
I'm wondering if you'd be able to share an excerpt from Sea Over Bow with us.
Sure, I'd love to. I'm going to read a little piece of the. I'm going to read the prologue, because this is the.
Okay.
This describes what it's like out there at the worst, and this is what I wanted people mm-hmm. to experience along with me. I am braced in the companionway with just my head and shoulders above deck, holding on so tightly my fingernails will leave marks in the wood. The cockpit enclosure protects me from the wind, which howls through the rigging, but it doesn't protect me from the salt spray, not entirely. Water drips through every little gap in the canvas, around the zippers, between the snaps. A wave breaks over the boat, drenching the cockpit completely, and for a minute I can't see anything through the plastic windows. Then they clear. I'm not sure which is better, seeing or not seeing. When we're in a trough, all I can see is a wall of water moving towards us. It's hard to tell how big the waves are, 3 meters, four. Sometimes they just lift us up, pass beneath the boat, set us back down, more or less gently. When we're on the crest of a wave, all I see is confusion in every direction, waves crashing into each other, sending plumes of salt spray into the air. Sometimes a wave breaks beside the boat, and we slew as the water boils around us. It's worse when a wave slams against the side with a heavy thud, and the boat rolls sharply, then rights itself. But not as bad as when a wave breaks right over us with a mighty crash. The boat shudders sickeningly, then is still for a moment, and water pours out through the scuppers. Then it all starts again. I look down through the companionway. Chris is stretched out on the starboard settee, asleep, I think. How is that possible? His face is relaxed, peaceful almost. His graying hair is a tousled mess. Who is this man, and what am I doing here? I could be back at my condo right now, sitting beside the fire, a glass of wine in hand, a big fat book open on my lap. What am I doing?
What am I doing?
Fair question.
Yeah. I thought that was a great question to ask. At when I read that, I'm like, wow, what am I in? Oh, wow, I'm in for something here. I had the fortune of being up in, I have some time off work right now, so I had the fortune of being up in Bancroft when I read both your and Ben's book. I dove right into both, and it was just such a wonderful journey. I love how you it wasn't just about the voyage. You actually posted some really interesting interactions with people in Antigua. There's an interesting section there where a woman comes up to you and prays with you. I'm sure there were so many things that you could have put in that memoir, but you know, it was wonderfully how you were strategically selective of putting that in there, because it was just before your voyage. Now, when you were writing this, were you writing this as you were sailing, or did you preserve these memories, and when you came back started writing these?
I only wish that I had that much mental capacity. No, I didn't preserve them. I captured the experience in several ways. One thing we have to do is keep a logbook when we're underway, and that normally has little entries about we're at this location, we're traveling at this speed, we've made this many miles, good today. But because Chris's entries were all like that, nice and neat. When I was on watch, it would have that, and then it would lapse into, I think Chris is mad at me because I ripped the preventers out of the deck and now he has to fix them, and I made this great stuff for dinner tonight. So our logbook captured a lot of information. Also, as a writer, I keep a journal. I just always keep a journal. Yeah. So when it wasn't too rough to sail, or wasn't too rough to write, to get out my book, it's a paper book and I write with a pen, and it wasn't too rough to get that out, I always would write in it many, many pages a day. And when it was too rough to write, I didn't, obviously. There was a third thing. I would write... We had the ability to send email occasionally over the single-side band radio.
C-mail. It was called C-mail.
C-mail, that's right. C-mail,
that's right.
Exactly.
That's right, yeah.
Exactly. Only occasionally, and it was quite expensive to send. But what I would do is I would write letters to my sister, who I was missing keenly, and I would write her these long, long letters on my computer again when it was calm enough that you could do that without throwing up. And then I would just send them when I was able to. So at the end of the journey, I had my journals, I had these letters to my sister and her responses to me, and our logbook to draw on. And then I did, as I worked through that material, of course, lots of things came back. I remembered lots of things as well. So
did you have to ask for permission?
I did, yeah. Yes. And I let her read them before I published them, and yeah. Yeah.
How's she liking the book?
She loves it.
She's an integral
probably.
Character
She's,
in the book.
Yeah.
And you share, one of the other things too, is you share a lot of family history on there.
Yeah.
Did you have to get permission from family members?
I did not.
No.
And it's interesting because this summer we had a Kenyan family reunion just a few weeks ago. And some of my cousins had read the book before, but many of them hadn't. And they asked for it at the reunion, and I just happened to have some in my trunk, so sold a bunch of books. And it was a funny feeling knowing that they were reading this. And this was not, I don't paint, a very rosy picture of my family necessarily. Like, I'm pretty, it's not, you know, I'm fair, but it's not mm-hmm. the sort of whitewashed version that you're used to hearing. And so in talking about my father in particular, the Kenyan involved, my cousins were really interested in, you know, their dad's brother and what he was like. So that made me feel a little uncomfortable, but I got good feedback from them. So maybe they're braver than I thought. I don't know.
I mean, the other thing too is you write about everybody says post nowadays. You write about things in here that I just didn't think about, or that one, for me at least, I would say one wouldn't think about it. I wouldn't think about it. There's a point in the novel where you're talking about, you know, when I'm flying, I'm not afraid of flying, even though people are like, you're 35,000 feet in the air. You don't think about that? And I'm like, no, not really. Whatever. But there's a point in this novel where you're talking about how there's a reader of the depth, like the sea depth, and that it's broken because you're more than 10,000. It's 10,000 feet deep for wherever you are.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would scare the heck out of me.
It's funny, it doesn't for me, because 6 feet of water is the same as thousands and thousands of feet of water. I mean, the you know, two things: stay out of the water when you're in a boat out there, and if you're in the water, you're only ever on the top of the water anyway.
Right.
So the depth doesn't freak me out that much. In fact, I like deep water way better than shallow water, because it behaves in a much more predictable way. In the shallows and close to shore, you get funny currents and, well, not to mention rocks coming up to try to bite the keel. The deep water feels really safe to me.
Interesting.
And it's beautiful. It's such a dark blue. It's unbelievably dark and unbelievably clear.
Okay, so I have to ask you then, if you had top three places that you'd like to sail to, what would they be?
Oh, that's just so easy. I think my favorite place of all was the Azores. This is a group of islands about 800 miles off the coast of Portugal. So they're the perfect thing, right? Deep, deep ocean, and then little islands, but close enough together that you can just sail in a day mm-hmm. across the deep ocean to the next little island. And they're fascinating places. So the Azores, the Bahamas, which the water's only 12 feet deep there, so this is, I'm telling the other side of the story.
Right.
But the bottom's all sand, and you can see the bottom. That's beautiful, beautiful sailing, too. It's sheltered sailing and easy. And the other thing would be the Balearic Islands in the Mediterranean. Obviously, I like groups of islands.
So you should go to Sicily.
I should.
Next.
Yes,
because
I agree.
Sicily is, and I don't just say that as a Sicilian Canadian and with my Sicilian family listening, but I heavily endorse Sicily just because it has so many beautiful islands right around it. I mean, there's Sicily, but then there's Pantelleria, there's Lampedusa, there's Stromboli, they're all gorgeous. Stromboli's great because it was created from a little volcanic eruption, and it's like it looks like a cream filled donut from the plane. Like, it's just really small, but it's absolutely gorgeous. Okay, so you have other places in mind to sail to. Does this mean that we'll see other memoirs?
I'm not sure. I think I've started working on a novel, and I think that's what's next for me.
Okay.
Something that really interests me is sometimes you can tell the truth about something. So I'm always interested in lives and life writing and how people live their lives. Sometimes you can get at the truth of a life even better through fiction than you can through memoir. So although I think what I'm going to write next is a novel, I think people who read it will recognize that there's a lot of me in it as well, which super narcissistic, but there you go. I don't think you can write about much except yourself.
Well, I mean, but that's exactly it, though, right? Mm-hmm. Ben mentioned it in his previous segment. There is something to be said for writing what you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons why Sea Over Bow flows like it does. You know about your family history, and you know about sailing, and you love both in the ways that you do, in the ways that we all do. And I think that's what certainly comes across. What are you hoping people get out of this book?
I think the most important thing to me is to encourage people not to settle for too little in life. It would have been so easy to stay in my condo with my books and my armchair and, yes, a glass of wine now and again. It was a real stretch for me to set out, to say yes to this adventure and to set out on it. So I think what I would like people to take away from this is that it's really important to try to find the courage to start again. If your life is feeling too small and too pinched, don't settle for that. Don't settle for too little.
That's yeah. Sound advice. It certainly is. And for me, I'm reading this story and I'm like, wow, it is inspiring. I always think about doing things to shake things up. And admittedly, I have always been curious about sailing, just about how much I'm drawn to the water. Yeah. But I wonder how much it would scare me if I was out in the middle of that expanse and I couldn't see anything else but expanse. Maybe it would have a different reaction for me. Who knows? Where can people get your book?
Many of the same places that Ben was saying. So mine, the local bookstore that carries it is called The Nautical Mind down on Queens Quay. Mm-hmm. I love the name of their store, and I love their store. They always carry the book and have supported me right from the start. Lots of independent bookstores have the book, but you have to check and see whether they've got it in. It's available at Chapters and through Indigo and also from the publisher Signature Editions on their website. You can order it there.
Yeah. Can I? One more question I just want to ask. What is the specific feeling that you have when you're out there sailing? Like, what is the high?
I don't know how to explain it. I feel so at peace. I feel so happy and so at peace. I feel this sounds really dopey, but this is the truth. I feel like I'm as one with the sky and the water. I just feel like I'm a part of all of that. I never feel that anywhere else in the world, but out there, that's what I feel.
That's beautiful. And I mean, so I heavily recommend this book, Sea Over Bow, by Signature Editions. That's Linda Kenyon, Sea Over Bow.